I'd like to discuss an issue that's been in everyone's mind recently, and that's the issue of meat. We became very painfully aware that it's possible that the most flagrant prohibitions could pass through our hands. And the worst level of not being kosher with the people, the consumers, having been fully confident that the product that they've been getting is absolutely on the highest level of kashrus. We call that mahadrin, mina mahadrin. The public confidence in the system has been severely shaken. In the past, one felt that he could adequately rely on the believability of the local merchant as long as he was someone that you knew personally and that you trusted, and that he exuded that feeling of trust and was acceptable, was a perfect member of the community, and had all the qualities which one would assume is all that's necessary to engender this very, very perfect trust. And in light of recent experience, it seems that these very reasonable qualities and characteristics are not enough. So first and foremost, I'd like to put in a caveat. Before discussing the issues, let's remember that the human race is still basically people that are good, and the people that we know, upstanding members of the community, people that behave outwardly very well and that conduct their lives on a superior and high level and standard, are usually fine people that could be trusted. Let's not lose our confidence in human beings and suddenly become suspicious of every shadow that we see is covering up on some monster that's lurking there, and that the whole world is now full of deceivers and liars. An experience, even such a terrible experience as the one that we had recently, and I'll elaborate on that in a moment, shouldn't destroy our entire trust in the people that we know and that we've learned with good reason to trust them. But let's get to the issue. Number one, we know that when it comes to meat, there's a greater need for monitoring and supervision than there is by other products. When you deliver a package of meat through an agent who will carry it through the street and bring it to a customer, bring it to a consumer, so there has to be two, what we call simonim, two marks that would take a forger to duplicate. And it has to be wrapped and packaged in a way that it's protected by these two simonim, these two signature pieces of information, perhaps some special signature, the special way it's wrapped, that can't be duplicated easily. All other foods that are sent outside of meat and wine and fish in certain cases, but all other foods need just one siman, one signature on the packaging to make sure that it's the right kosher food. And why is it so? Very simple. Because there's a tremendous price differential when between kosher meat and wine and fish and the non-kosher variety. And because of that, there's a greater enticement, a yetzer hara, as it were, for a person to go out of his way and surreptitiously duplicate one simen and alter the packaging of something that's non-kosher to make it appear as if it were kosher. So that we have to have two, so that it should be extremely difficult, and we could be close to being guaranteed that nothing was changed. Now, the other product, the price differential, isn't that great. And if you're going to go out of your way to duplicate a simen, it has to be worth your while. You're not going to save that much money by taking the non-kosher variety and substituting it for the kosher product. So therefore, you have to have a little protection, a good amount of protection, but not twice the protection that is needed as we find in the case of meat. Now, why is it that we do find substitutions more often by meat than by other products? It's not that usual. It's not that usual to find substitutions of non-kosher products for kosher products in other areas, but in meat we often find that such a thing happens. The reason for it is, as we said before, there's a great advantage, and you could make a lot more money selling kosher meat. In addition, there are factors in the production of meat which create a special oddity that makes someone often attracted to just getting a little bit of non-kosher product to fill his particular need. As we all know, the demands of consumers on producers varies. Sometimes there's all of a sudden a need for a lot more product than is usually produced. For some reason, there's a seasonal desire to have a certain amount of product. Of course, everybody's familiar that before Yontif, so a lot more meat is called for. A lot more turkey in America is bought during the season of Thanksgiving, and so on. Shabbos Chanukah is a big time for eating turkey and meat. There are various seasons throughout the year. Sometimes there are a lot of weddings and big affairs in certain seasons, and all of a sudden there's a great demand. The supply is based on a steady production. You have to have a big staff to produce all that, shochtim, and people who do the malicha, the salting, and the processors and the packing. You could have 300-400 people working in the typical meat plant. You can't suddenly increase the personnel to suit the need that could last for as little as a week or two. You can't hire an additional 50 to 100 people and have them available when you need them so as to increase the production. And there are many other factors as well. You can't suddenly go out and buy more chickens and more kosher animals. You can't even find the truckers to deliver them. From beginning to end, it would be next to impossible to satisfy a surge in production. There was once a company, a chicken-producing company, that gained for themselves a tremendous reputation. The reputation was for service in fruit production and food distribution. There are many factors that make one company more popular than the other. Sometimes it's the quality of the product that they produce. It's the availability, the delivery. There's such a thing called service. And that means when I call up any time and I need this particular product, they're very accommodating and they'll always deliver and give me right away what I need without making me wait, without causing delays, some other companies always make problems when you ask them for something additional, for some variation of the regular purchasing order that comes from week to week. Service is a big thing in any industry. You walk into a store, and when someone runs over and waits on you, and you could get your product without having to search for it and become frustrated, that's what we call service. There was once a company that was great at service. They had a marvelous name. And anybody who asked them for any amount of product, they were always able to accommodate them. And no other company, from biggest to the smallest, was able to do the same. It should have been an alarm signal to lots of people. But these things, when they happen, people are blinded. They like it. Service is a welcome thing, and people don't like to push away a welcome thing. And so the alarm went by unnoticed until it was discovered that the reason they were so good at providing product anytime and in any amount was just simply because surreptitiously they bought non-kosher products, chickens that had no shechita. And in the dark of the night, they would package them with false packaging, which was similar to the kosher packaging, and they would double the inventory in the delivery trucks and get to their destination with the amount of chicken that was requested. And when the whole thing broke, people suddenly remembered, why didn't we notice this danger signal? And we should have responded to their penchant for being able to provide such amiable and available service as they had. Now, the population in the country grows steadily and slowly. It doesn't grow in spurts. The community gets larger, more product is needed. But the ability to produce only comes in spurts when it comes to chickens and animals. You have to add an extra line, hire another 10 shechtim, hire another few hundred workers. To add to the production possibility, you have to invest a lot of money and add a new facility or a new line within the existing facility, and then you could provide for the extra production that's needed. But then you have to have lots and lots of customers all at once to justify that. So whereas population grows slowly but steadily, production grows in spurts. And therefore, it sometimes behooves the company to provide for the small amount of additional production that's needed by the population growth. Well, sometimes it's impossible to do that unless you finagle and get your product elsewhere. So there is a big enticement, and there are many other factors that go into it that make it so that there should be some deception in the meat industry. Other products, you could produce a large amount of additional product and store them, or sell them to the outside world, to the non-Jewish consumer. The price is almost the same. It won't be sold at a loss. It'll be sold at a smaller profit, perhaps at no profit at all. So if you produce enough product to be sold as at a profit to the kosher consumer, and the rest of it you'll dispense without losing anything, at least, to the non-kosher consumer, even if you had to invest money to have it produced according to kosher standard. When it comes to meat, it'll be sold at a loss because the amount of investment to get all the kosher slaughterers and to hire people to do the job is so prohibitive that it could only be sold at the price of kosher meat. That's why it's more difficult to grow slowly and to provide what the growing consumer base needs in the meat industry. And during the interim, before the additional production is made, there are people who fall in and do the wrong thing. All these things have to be watched out for. And so, as most of you know, not that long ago, in a suburb outside of New York, one of the most reputable merchants, a person who was respected in the community, went and added to his distribution amount and supplied an ever larger and larger growing customer base, and didn't increase his production at all, and got the product from non-kosher sources. And when it broke, it was a scandal that left everyone in a state of shock. Just to tell you parenthetically, these things are not confined to one recent event, but throughout history, there have always been cases where deception occurred in the production of kosher meat, and where non-kosher meat was introduced. I'm not going to speak any more about the reasons for it. I discussed enough of them. I'll just mention that when it comes to meat, animal meat, there's a tremendous amount of non-kosher byproduct in every production. The hindquarters are all considered non-kosher. The non-trefa meat, without the ones that have lesions in the lungs that make them unacceptable, amount to roughly half or more or less of the kosher meat production. So before you turn around, you have three quarters of the meat that's non-kosher, and it has to be sold to a market that's willing to buy it. And sometimes this market just doesn't exist, and you have to sell it at a loss. And there is, because of that, also another reason that people are enticed into doing the wrong thing and selling non-kosher meat as kosher. So even though there are mashkichim, supervisors, who overlook the production, but when the rewards are strong enough and when the enticement is great enough, so people could go out of the way to deceive the supervisors and get the non-kosher meat into the supply system. I'll mention a story that I've heard from a gentleman who was personally a witness to one of the worst scandals of all time in the meat production. It was about 80 years ago, a little bit more perhaps. There was a very reputable kosher meat production company that had its plant in Westchester. And there they would produce kosher salami and cold cuts and all different kinds of meat products in that factory. And there was a rumor that a lot of the product that came out was made from horse meat. Government inspectors and others checked and went there, and nobody could find a thing. And they always came back with a positive report. Despite the rumors, the product is kosher. But there was one disgruntled worker who perhaps didn't get his share of the loot that he expected. And he came and he told the New York Board of Kashrus, which served the governor, and told the people that he personally witnessed the introduction of horse meat into the production. And he explained why no one had found it till now. He said there was a big wall that was lowered and made it look as if the only thing at that plant was the kosher-producing part of the plant. And the other part, where they processed the horse meat, was built into a hill, into a mountain behind the plant. The reason there were no witnesses was because they had a little tower above the plant, where there was someone, an observer, who stood the whole day and watched with a telescope and scanned the countryside. He had a perfect view of all approaches to the company and could see if anyone suspicious was coming along. They would immediately lower the wall and hide everything, and when the inspectors would come in, they would find nothing. And so they decided on a method of discovering everything. They learned about the schedule of the company, and they found that at a certain hour during the day there would be a garbage truck that would drive up to carry off the garbage. And so a bunch of government people, some with drawn guns, soldiers and policemen, and some rabbonim and some kosher supervisors from the governor's board of kashrus, all gathered together. And when the garbage truck came, they commandeered it and kept it with its personnel in protective custody. And they put on uniforms of the garbage collectors, and they got into the truck, and they drove straight up to the company, right through the open door, because there was nothing suspicious of their approach, and they went straight into the back part where they were producing the horse meat. These soldiers got out with drawn guns and arrested everyone at the plant, and the next day there was a sensational scandal throughout the community. Everybody knew about it. This is just one of the incidents in the history of the kosher meat production, which is more recent, and but just gives you an example of how wary we have to be. What should we, the consumer, do to protect ourselves? First and foremost, we have to shop only at a store, a supermarket, a distributor, a retail person who has supervision from a qualified rabbi who knows what to look for and who has an agent there at the distribution center at all times. That's called a mashgiach tamidi. Now, a second requirement is that this supervising rabbi should be at least part of an organization of such rabbis who meet from time to time. And when I say from time to time, I meet quite frequently, and discuss amongst themselves what things to look out for, share their experiences, build up a set of standards, and make things so tight and so secure that there shouldn't be room for a breach to occur. They should learn to check production records, to check purchases against sales, to look through the computer record, and to be able to see if there's not a discrepancy. If 1 ounce of meat is sold more than that which was produced and bought, then it must be coming from some source outside of the kosher sources that these people get their meat from. So if the rabbi is part of a group that shares the supervision, that's the best. If he's a learner who gives his own hashgacha, his own supervision, he should at least be a member of a group of rabbis who seriously work together and share their experiences and constantly improve on the standards and remain on guard. Here in the United States of America, we love to quote one of the founding fathers, Mr. Thomas Jefferson, who said, "The price for liberty is eternal vigilance." It's this eternal vigilance that's absolutely necessary in order to ensure that there are no shenanigans, there'll be nothing wrong with the meat production. If there's sudden changes, and all of a sudden a greater volume of meat is available, if one company becomes sort of the service people who seem to always have product sufficient for any amount of consumer request, it should signal an alarm, and their abonim should be attuned to this. If they meet together as a group, they'll always be attuned to everything, because every type of experience that happened to an individual will be shared by others. The Chofetz Chaim, the Holy Chofetz Chaim, had said just about 80 years ago, when the Agudas Yisroel met at their first international conference called the Knesset Gedolah, Chofetz Chaim got up and said, one of the great advantages of a conference like this is to be able for Rabbonim from all over the world, from many different countries, to share their experiences and what they learned from their tenure of service as Rabbonim, so that if there's something important that they experienced, something worth learning about, it should be available not just to themselves, but the entire community of Rabbonim. And it's this principle that's extremely important. If I would buy by a butcher store, and the owner looks trustworthy, and he inspires confidence in me, and so does the Rav, I would still require that the Rav should be a member of such an organization, where he's constantly learning, constantly on guard, constantly being made aware of different methods of hashgacha, improved standards, things that could happen and go wrong, be on top of everything, and he'll never get fooled. And in that case, the consumer could be absolutely certain that what they're getting is the right product. You may be aware that an Empire Chicken Company has introduced something very, very worthwhile, that's special packaging with a holograph and a seal that comes straight from the company, and it's not open until the consumer receives it. This is possible in the chicken industry. In the meat industry, it's next to impossible, because a large cut of meat has to be sliced up and prepared to the desired size and shape by the butcher, who's an expert at that. And that's what the consumer must have. He can't just get a package, a closed package, with one portion that's produced at the manufacturing level. But with the proper supervision, with a mashkiach who's there to examine every purchase, and with someone who's there to compare the books and knows how to look for these things to make sure that there's no discrepancy between acquisition and distribution. If all of these things are done, it's hardly possible that there should be any deception, and we'll have nothing to fear from. And this is a system that should be set up in the community. Consumer demand for it is the only factor that would make it happen. People should speak with their abonim if the abonim are loners that have no connection with anyone else and have no means of sharing experiences. They may be very, very wonderful, fine characters, but you need lots and lots of experience and teaching in order to do a perfect job. But if that's done, then we'll all be confident and we'll be able to provide a welcome and good answer for the age-old question that's asked in the Torah, Mi yachileinu bosor? Who's going to give us meat to eat? Thank you.